Welcome to Switzerland in Sound, produced and presented by Bob Zanotti.
This is the sound of the River Kander here in Kandersteg. In fact, Kandersteg gets its name from the river. This is a sparkling, crystal clear mountain river which starts up in the mountains here in the glaciers in the mountains above Kandersteg. And here at the edge of the river, you can even hear the stones, I'm stepping on them. We are at one of the places which will be known maybe to many scouts in the world. It is the International Scout Center. And with me is Mark Knippenberg. Mark is the vice director of the International Scout Center in Kandersteg. It has a great history because the International Scout Center here in Kandersteg was founded by no one less than the founder of the scouting movement himself, Lord Baden-Powell. That goes back quite some time.
Yes. If I'm correct, it was in 1920. In one of the first World Jamborees, he expressed the wish that there was a permanent mini jamboree, not only every 4 years, 2 weeks, but a permanent one. And he sent all the international commissioners away with the task to find a place, and the chief scout of Switzerland found in 1922 this place, and he invited Baden-Powell, and yeah, he liked it, the environment, and that's how this center started as the permanent mini jamboree.
And he came here, and I believe there was an anecdote about it. He said, basically, this is where I will build my center. This was his idea of what scouting meant.
Yeah, that's correct. It's the center, it's the position in the valley, it's the possibility to go up into the mountains and do high alpine scouting, have the environment, all the things coming together. I think that's what made his decision to say, okay, this is the place.
Indeed, I know the scouting movement has changed somewhat over the decades, but scouting is still based very much today on a love for nature and care for nature. Yeah. And I imagine this is the kind of thing you do here in Kandersteg.
Yes, it's the program we provide is based on three pillars, and that's one is high adventure, alpine adventure, one is environmental, and the third one is international friendship, which are all coming together in scouting, of course. And yeah, environmental for us is very, very important because we want to keep it the same way as it is and not spoiling it. So we have a lot of workshops and seminars and activities around the theme of environmental.
Also on the other side of the river and the other side of the rail line here, there's a bridge, an underpass that takes us over to the other side. I have walked and hiked through that area, and you have one vast area of camping places there, and in the summer especially they are filled and you see flags from all nations.
Yeah, in summer we have let's say averagely over 1,000 scouts from all over the world
at any given time
at any given time in the period of July till August on site, and they come from everywhere, majority from Europe because that's easier,
it's closer of course.
But yeah, at least every year we have scouts from America or from the Arabian areas or from Asia Pacific. Not in huge numbers, but they are there.
Incidentally, is there an International Scout Center special merit badge?
Yeah, we have actually several based also on the theme, so you can have the High Adventure Award from the World Scout Center, or the Environmental Award, or the International Friendship Award, or the Explore Switzerland Award, all kinds, yes.
Well, you're open all year round, and we happen to be speaking in the winter, but in the summer, obviously, a lot of outdoor things to do, as we've described. But what about the winter? Is it largely what other people do here in Kandersteg?
Yeah, the activities in winter are mainly based around the whole winter theme. We have some nationalities that like to do some outdoor camping in 1 meter of snow, but mostly it is
roughing it.
Yes, yes. But mostly it is. It is. It's together skiing, snowboarding, snowshoeing, sledding, curling, cross-country skiing, everything.
And you have facilities here. You have dormitories. You have rooms here on the premises.
Yeah, the building itself, the chalet, has up to 200 places, 200 beds divided in 3 bedrooms, 4 bedrooms, up to 22 bedrooms.
Now, is the International Scout Center only available to registered scouts, or can others use it too?
Others can use it too, but we have blocked periods that are only for registered scouts. That is, for example, over Christmas, New Year, these months of February, especially in the busy ski weeks, and a period of the 1st of July till the end of August. In summer we normally say till the 1st of May we block summer, if there are still spaces left then everybody else is welcome too. But the rest of the year everybody is welcome. You can come back with and bring your father and mother with you and the rest of your family.
I see that there's a bus from the UK parked outside, so you have a group from the UK on the premises at the moment. What about an individual scout? One individual says, I'd love to spend a week or two there. Can you accommodate that person?
It's no problem. It depends of course on the availability of beds, but we have a lot of individual scouts coming from all over the world. Who stay here for 1, 2, 3, 4 weeks enjoying everything here.
Is there full accommodation, meals included for example?
Yeah, we can provide everything. We can provide you the bed and all the meals, or you can have one of the guest kitchens fully utilized and you can
do your own cooking then.
Your own cooking, yeah.
So even for families, if you're a scouting family, like, you know, you might be 4 or 5 people, no problem.
No problem at all.
And what about the cost? Can you give an idea of what, for example, for one individual or two people a week here might cost with the full accommodation?
Yeah, you can say we have scouts and non-scout prices. So if you are a registered scout, an overnight in the chalet costs 16 francs per person.
16 francs. Which is just about 11 US dollars right now, which is not much.
Not much, no. And then additional to it, a full board day price is for the meal 30 Swiss francs, mm-hmm. or you can have the meals individually.
So we're up to $30 a day, roughly, give or take the rate of exchange.
Yeah,
which is still a bargain.
I think so. Yeah, and it includes the tourist tax and the VAT and everything. It's all included. It's everything there. Yeah.
Shall we go inside and see if we can talk to one or two people? Okay. Well, inside, very very cozy in here, and very much in the combination of what I would call the Swiss and the international scouting style. Lots of wood, lots of natural materials. You have a good feeling in here.
I hope so. At least the pressure we get at the scouts who come, they love it immediately. You see all the scarves and necker.
From all over the world. It's very
all
colorful.
Lots of groups.
Shows how diverse the scouting movement is.
Yeah, and it leaves people leave their scarves to be put up, so the next time they come and they can say, yes, this is my scarf, I've been here. And I think it gives a good atmosphere, yeah.
What about the evening? Social activities, getting together?
Yeah, there is possibilities. We have inside chimney places that can be used for that. And, of course, in the warmer periods outside, campfires are possible. And there are days with organized evening activities by the center. It can be anything from a huge campfire or a spiritual gathering or evening activities in the winter with cheese fondue eating or curling or sledding in the evening.
Who's on the reception today? Where are you from?
From Norway.
How long have you been here in Kandersteg?
I was here first for my first season in winter 2002. Then I worked in the kitchen in the summer 2002. And then I've been back here since September working in reception.
Well, you've kept coming back, so you must like it.
Yeah, it's a good sign, isn't it?
What is it like meeting so many people from all over the world?
Well, that's the greatest thing about this place, I think, that you make so many friends from places you would normally never meet people from.
And here's the dining room. All this brings me back to scout camp. Doing kitchen police. Somebody has been setting the tables here. Very, very comfortable indeed. You're from Ireland?
Yes.
I got to come back behind the counter here and ask you, where are you from in Ireland?
Dublin.
I think I've heard of it. How long have you been here in Kandersteg?
I'm only here for a week helping. I was staff in summer 2002.
You're a scout too?
Yeah, and a scout leader.
Good people?
Yeah, lots of fun.
And here in the kitchen, a little bit of music going to make it a little easier for these people to turn out the goods here for today. Where are you from?
The Netherlands.
Holland, from the Netherlands.
Yes.
Yeah, and you're the cook?
Yes, I'm here for 3 weeks.
What's for lunch today?
French fries with hamburgers and some vegetables.
How many people are you cooking for today?
On lunchtime, 28, and this evening, 160 people.
Well, you're a busy man, I can see that. Thanks very much. Yeah. And we even have a Swiss scout here behind the counter. Where are you from?
East of Switzerland.
St. Gallen?
Yeah.
Ah, how did I guess?
Not the city, but
the canton of St. Gallen, the area.
Yeah.
Have you been here before to the center?
No. It's the first time.
Must be funny for you that the International Scout Center is in Switzerland. You're Swiss, but when you come here, the language is usually English. That's sort of the lingua franca here, isn't it? Everyone speaks English, and you meet people from all over the world.
Yeah, it's really strange for me that I'm in my own country, but it's really good because I'm so near at home. I know the things here, how they work in this country, but I feel like somewhere else.
Almost like a tourist in your own country.
Yeah, it's really.
I heard another variety of English spoken here a moment ago. Where are you from?
I'm from the UK, central England, near Birmingham.
What's the nicest part of it?
Just working here with everybody from different nationalities and then seeing everybody here in the summer, 1,500 people all having fun. You just can't beat it.
We didn't talk to any of these people beforehand. Nothing was arranged. And it's quite obvious that everyone here is very, very happy and will be coming back. And I can feel there's a wonderful spirit here. There is definitely that scouting spirit we talk about. Mark Knippenberg, the Vice Director of the International Scout Center, founded by Lord Baden-Powell himself in the 1920s, the place where scouts from all over the world congregate and enjoy each other's company and some of the best things that scouting is all about. Mark, thanks very much indeed.
Thank you very much. It was my pleasure.
You can now hear programs from PCJ Radio while on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher is a free news and talk mobile app available for your smartphone. Downloading is quick and easy. Just find Stitcher in the App Store. It's free and just takes a few seconds. Then during registration, hit the promo code box and enter PCJ to get automatically entered to win $100. For more information, go to www.pcjmedia.com and click on the Stitcher logo on the right menu. PCJ Radio on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio.
As I'm speaking to you, part of me is in Italy. Part of me is in Switzerland. We are on the world famous, the renowned Great St. Bernard Pass, the place where they bred the Great St. Bernard dog. Yes, the monastery, the hospice is all here. You can hear in the background a mountain stream coming down, an occasional car passing by. Here's the stream. And this is the dividing line between two countries. We have sometimes great difficulty in fathoming, understanding these national frontiers of Europe. But that's the way it is. A mountain stream, it was decided, separates Switzerland from Italy. I'm still on the Italian side, and I'm in the European Union, a founding member of the European Union, Italy, and just literally inches away, my right hand actually is already in Switzerland. Isn't that something? Let me welcome back to the microphones of Switzerland in Sound, Aubrey Diem, professor of geography, and we might as well say what in effect he also was for many years in Ontario, Canada, a professor of history, a prolific writer, a political observer and novelist. Aubrey, nice to see you. You're on the Swiss side. I have to admit, just for the novelty of it, we had lunch on the Italian side. We decided to have a pasta dish. I had polenta, which is a traditional Italian dish from the mountains. And here we are. There it says, we look at the sign, it says Italia, benvenuti, Italia, European Union. And we turn around, and there is the Swiss customs, and it says, welcome to Switzerland, Col du Grand Saint-Bernard, which is the French, the language on the Swiss side. It is French around here in Lower Canton Valley. And it says, altitude 2,473 meters. Well, I'm going to join you on the Swiss side.
Okay.
Here I am, Aubrey. The history of the Great St. Bernard Pass goes back to pre-Christian times, I understand.
Well, certainly the Celtics who settled on both sides in the Rhone Valley and the Valley d'Aosta had to come over this pass. It was just a footpath, naturally, but they came over, and probably many of them were caught up here, and there are no glaciers around, but it's an area that gets considerable snow, and in fact the pass has just been open for a few weeks. It normally opens at the end of May, beginning of June.
Let me interject that this pass is one of the latest to open and one of the earliest to close.
Well, you see pictures because at the hospice you see pictures of what it's like in wintertime, and it's completely cut off from any kind of land transportation except skis. And there's enormous amounts of snow, 2-3 meters, depending upon the year, that closes it. And they have these plows which just go through it, and leaving enormous banks on both sides where the snow comes down from the mountains.
Maybe there's a more cynical explanation for this, and that is there's a very expensive all-weather tunnel which has been open since 1962, and I have a feeling they like to see you use it.
Well, of course, it's about in dollars, I would say $25-$30 one way, and a little less if you go both ways, so it is rather expensive. The tunnel's about 5 kilometers. It goes under the pass, and it's a very important tunnel because it keeps the communications between Switzerland and Italy, this part of the world, open all year round.
And we have to mention that there's a major city on the Italian side as you go down from the Great St. Bernard Pass, and that is Aosta. Now, you know Aosta very well because you did research there as a student. In fact, one of your novels, it's actually, we could say, a factual novel, a political novel about the Second World War and the Italian resistance here, is based in this very area, and you know it like the back of your hand. But the Romans, I think, came here very, very early, and this was one of the important trading routes for the Romans.
What was important for the Grand San Bernard was that it linked the northwestern part of Italy with Switzerland. Therefore, the city of Aosta was really Augustus, named after a Roman emperor.
Beautiful now, ruins there. The whole city's walled in, and it's almost intact.
It's called Rome of the Alps, and it's something to see. And the route went from the Grand San Bernard through to the Lake of Geneva, and then they went by boat a little ways, and then from there they went over to Basel, which at that time was called Augst, and you can see Roman ruins at Augst. You can see Roman ruins at the city that's beneath the San Bernard Pass on the Swiss sides. That's Martigny,
which also has substantial Roman ruins.
Yeah. Other things happened here, and it was a well-known route. And when Napoleon had to go to Italy to fight in Italy, he took his whole army with guns and everything else over the St. Bernard Pass.
Well, I'm thinking of our friend Napoleon, and he came through here, I believe, in 1802, and, well, he used a lot of facilities here for thousands of his troops. He ran up a lot of bills, which he never paid.
I guess, being general, he didn't have to pay them.
Or he said, being Napoleon, he thought he didn't have to pay them.
Later he became emperor, of course, but that was before he was emperor. But what is funny is that not many years ago, I think it was François Mitterrand, the then premier of
the late former president,
President of France, he visited one of the villages on the Swiss side, and the village mayor,
Bourg Saint-Pierre, which is where a lot of the Napoleonic troops were put up.
He presented the mayor of Bourg Saint-Pierre presented Mitterrand with the bill from Napoleon's time, so Mitterrand just laughed it all off, and
they never paid up.
It still hasn't been paid.
But the one thing, I came up here for the first time, Aubrey, in 1964, and I've come up many times over the years since then. We're talking, you know, the 40 years roughly, that period, and you know what? Nothing ever changes here. The Great St. Bernard is simply eternal. It's, you mentioned Rome before in a different context. It's as eternal as Rome. There's no building up here. There's no development. It opens, it closes, and that's it. It's déjà vu. It's like the first time I saw it. Do you agree with that?
Pretty much, except I was here 10 years before, 54, and I hitchhiked over this pass in the autumn. Very few cars, and I remember the car that took me, it was a Jaguar. He had a flat, I had to fix the flat, and the thing which was surprising was that it was paved on the Italian side, but it was all gravel on the Swiss side.
Why was that?
Because of the war, the Swiss wanted to protect their side from fascism, from the Nazis, and this was was therefore really run down on the Swiss side. It was difficult to get down. And later on, I biked it going down, but I had to take the bus to where the gravel ended and the paved road began. Then I could go all the way. In fact, I went that time to Geneva by bicycle. But as you say, nothing much has changed.
There's something else that we see here, Aubrey, and that is that we're in summer here now, but it gets so cold up here and so isolated that you see, it almost looks like patches of glacial ice and snow. It never melts here. And we find water trickling down everywhere, and this is, of course, a watershed area. Canton Valley is very important and very well known, especially this area, the lower valley, for hydroelectric production.
The lateral valleys that come into the Rhone Valley, feed into the Rhone Valley, most of them that can be have been dammed. In fact, coming up on the Swiss side, you see a small dam and the reservoir in the dam, which is almost full right now. Some of the large dams are enormous structures, and one, the Grand Isance, is the tallest dam in the world. If you put the Eiffel Tower in the reservoir, only the top of the Eiffel Tower would come out.
Let's take a break here, Aubrey, because we have a couple of minutes to go before we reach the hospice and monastery at the Great Saint Bernard. We'll have a look in there. All right, and here we are, Aubrey, on the doorstep of the monastery. Let's go in. Aubrey, you're an historian. Is it true that the monastery and hospice has been up here on the pass since the 11th century?
Well, it has been built then, and of course it provided shelter for people who were traveling over the pass in summertime, in autumn, early snowfall, even in the spring when they tried to get over and maybe they were caught in a late snowstorm. So it provided shelter for them, and even more important, there was a presence here so that the monks could be in communication with the people down below, telling them when it was time to open up the pass and things of that sort, so that there was always the summer season that was important, because during the winter season nobody could get through here.
It must be a very lonely life. It certainly was in those days. No television, no communications. The only messages came by foot. It took a very special breed of person to spend a time up here.
Well, I guess if you're a monk, you're that kind of person.
Now, the dogs are actually from here, the Great St. Bernard breed, but you don't see them running around the streets. I understand that they are still bred on a very limited basis by one or two of the monks, but they haven't taken over really the village. And there is one in particular, Barry, which was the most famous St. Bernard. You'll find him stuffed in the Alpine Museum in Bern, as a matter of fact. But up here, I heard that there's a story going around, and apparently it's true, that they actually keep the bodies of people since the 19th century, the bodies of people who died through exposure, and they never found out who they were. They're kept actually preserved here, even with their original clothes on, so that if anybody has a picture of them or might be able to somehow identify them, they can come in here and pick out the victim. Before we say goodbye to the monastery and also the Great St. Bernard, there's a very important story which you know firsthand because you researched it, you wrote it up, and it's contained in your book entitled First Rains of Autumn. It has to do with the true story of a partisan or resistance operations here on the Italian side during the Second World War, and one man in particular by the name of Enrico Löwenthal.
Yes, that's right, and it's amazing. He was 18, 19, and he was in charge of the route leading up from Aosta here.
He was a partisan.
Yeah, he was partisan, and he fought. It was a very bitter struggle. He fought against the fascists and the Nazis in the High Alps, and particularly last year of the war, when Germany was losing the war, a lot of Germans went over here, and they tried to seek asylum in Switzerland until the end of the war, and he caught a whole group on the way up here, surrounded them, and told them that unless they gave him all their guns and all their rolling stock, they would be shot. But if they gave him their guns and their ammunition, they'd let them proceed over the pass. So the German soldiers, they had no choice. They didn't give them the guns and everything, and the next day they thought they were going to be shot in any case, but instead Lowenthal said to them, and he spoke perfect German because he was a German Jew whose parents had come here to live in Italy, he said, go tell your friends that a Jewish soldier saved your lives. And he became friendly with one of the officers, they exchanged addresses, and after the war was over they met again, and it continued for a long time, and he was present at the officer's daughter's birth, when she gave birth to a child in Munich.
The pointlessness of war.
Yeah, the pointlessness of war. Well, and let's say in the mountains, even though they fought one side and the other in the mountains are just such a spiritual place. It's not just a tragedy, but it's also, I think, a sin to fight one another in the mountains.
And we see all around here, right on the border, as a matter of fact, just barely on the Swiss side, stone pillboxes that were constructed by the military. This must have been extremely tense here during the war.
Well, during the war, the Italian side was fortified, the Swiss side was fortified. A lot of people escaped, not by going directly on the pass, but by being led over the border in the mountains. And there were Jews and others, soldiers, British soldiers who were interned in Italy and who escaped. A lot of these men made their way to freedom by coming to Switzerland through this area.
And tremendous history which comes alive when you visit the Great St. Bernard Pass. It's all here. It's not built up. It's barely changed for generations and generations. Aubrey Diem, professor of geography and history, writer, thank you so much for giving us your time today to look at the Great St. Bernard Pass, where you spent so much of your own time and did so much research. From the Great St. Bernard, the monastery on the Great St. Bernard, where the dogs come from. For Switzerland and Sound, this is Bob Zanotti.
If you want more information about Switzerland and Sound, check them out online at www.switzerlandandsound.com.
Hi, this is Bob Zanotti. Do you miss Swiss Radio International? If so, I invite you to visit my website, SwitzerlandInSound.com. Colorful and informative radio features about Switzerland, its destinations, interesting people, politics, culture, and even the two Bobs, SwitzerlandInSound.com, where English language radio from Switzerland lives on.